Simply Financial with Christopher Calandra, Certified Financial Planner, is an innovative, comprehensive, informative, and cutting-edge podcast that discusses financial topics ranging from personal finance, economics, politics, and personal growth. Simply Financial will cover intriguing and thought-provoking questions so that the listener can simply increase their financial IQ.
Welcome to the Simply Financial Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Calandra. This is episode number 35 of season number 2. I have with me a very special guest, Ann Babiarz. She has been on the show, I think, 2 times already. I always enjoy discussions with her. She has such a wonderful background, and today's conversation should be even better, I think, than the previous two. Please listen at the end of our conversation, because we are going to do a autographed book of her offering, which is titled Flashes of Light. So you'll be able to register for that at my website. I'll fill you in after the conversation. But Ann, thank you for taking some time out today and talking about your really special book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Always enjoy being on the show.
So the book is not brand new. It was published in 2015, correct?
That's correct.
And you've written a couple of books, but where does this fall in the line? Was this your first, second, third? Which would it be in the order?
It is actually my fourth book.
Okay, so it was your fourth book. So you were already a writer, an experienced writer, and you have a fabulous background as a coach, former certified financial planner. You've had your own radio show in Chicago. I know you live in Florida now. But in 2014, you had something happen in your life that led to you writing this book, Flashes of Light. So my first question on that subject is, the previous three books, were they written with the same personal experience, something happening to you that triggered you writing the book, or was this experience fundamentally different?
Actually, the first book that I wrote in tandem with my husband was The Graveyard Gambit, and that was actually a mystery novel. It was just something that we did while we were spending time in Florida. So whenever we would come to Florida, we would write on this book. And he is a retired attorney, and his concentration was in estate administration, elder law, and asset protection planning. And at the time, I worked for Hewitt Associates, and my background at that time, I was actually a nighttime trader for Hewitt Associates. So we melded our experience together to write The Graveyard Gambit, which was about a woman who was the wife of a mob, within a mob family, who is trying to escape. And she uses the tools of, kind of the things that you would do if you were doing asset protection planning, and trading, because she had the background of, we used my background a little bit, and she escaped and the book is all about that. It was a lot of fun. We actually did a cruise to the Bahamas with people that bought the book, and it was a very fun experience.
Wow.
So that was the first one.
Very good.
Thank you.
So let's catch everybody up. You wrote Flashes of Light in 2015 based on your personal experience. Something happened to you and your husband in 2014. So could you talk a little bit about Flashes of Light, what it's about, and we'll go from there.
Okay, well, Flashes of Light is actually about my journey through very serious life-threatening illnesses. I didn't just get one. I had multiple. I had ovarian cancer, and that was it also caused strokes. So I ended up having multiple strokes, and, you know, and in connection with the ovarian cancer. The way that we found out that I had it was through my initial stroke, where I lost my speech, I lost my vision, and no one really knew what the problem was. And so, you know, they basically, long story short, I was taken to the hospital, spent a couple days in the hospital. They really didn't know what to do. And so they sent me home with aspirin, saying, "We really don't know what caused it. So, you know, here, just, you know, take your statins and your aspirin and you should be fine." Well, less than 2 weeks later, I was back in the hospital, where they had to dig a little bit deeper to figure out what was causing the strokes. Of course, someone of my age, which was in my late 40s at the time, you know, shouldn't be having strokes like that. And so obviously the initial thing that they thought was that I was on drugs. So that was the first test they ran. And it's like, no, I don't, that I'm about as far away from that as possible. So that's
going to say, for my listeners, this is not a story about illicit drug use and abuse, right?
No, absolutely not.
and you're healthy now, and you've been healthy the last couple of years, correct?
Yeah, I'm almost to 5 years. So
as the book talks about, prior to this first episode of having this stroke seemingly out of the blue, you are a healthy 40-something. I think you were teaching aerobics or yoga. I mean, a very active, fit, healthy lifestyle, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. In the years prior to my corporate years, I owned fitness studios. And, you know, I was a very, very avid, you know, believer in having fantastic health and doing whatever you could do to sustain it. So when I was the one who was diagnosed with these illnesses, people were just absolutely amazed. I was the last person anyone would have ever thought that would ever have anything like this happen.
So why did you decide to write the book? It seems to me, not having written a book myself, to write about something as personal and as just compelling happening in your own life, why did you decide to, if you will, go public with your experience and decide to write the book? What was your goal, you and your husband, in deciding to write the book back in 2015?
Well, there were a number of goals in connection with that. And really, the main goal was to help people who may be kind of going through sort of that dark night of the soul experience that I had, and that by virtue of that, my husband had, because, as being a couple, it's happening to both of you. It's happening to your family, you know. To give folks hope that they can actually get through a time like that. I mean, because for me, I was a personal development coach. I thought I had all the right answers. And throughout the book, you know, you'll see all of these things were tested for me every turn of the road, because it was like one stroke, then another stroke. Then I ended up with PEs, which are, pulmonary embolisms. And then I had DVTs. All of those things could kill a person, just one. And it was like, and then, you know, for me to just emerge out of this with, you know, without very many sustaining symptoms or anything, it was absolutely what I would call a miracle. And it's like, well, this must have been presented to me for a reason. And so part of the reason for that book was to get it out there.
So when did you decide to write the book? I'm curious, were you still in the midst of this crisis where you said, boy, if I make it through this, I really want to write a book on it? Or was it something that happened after things had died down and you were more reflecting on what had happened?
It was, I could say there were flashes as I was going through it. And, you know, one of the things that I have a client who went through a very similar experience, and he uses a phrase that I will just I'll just say it, but but you can bleep the word out because I'm not going to say the word, but you can't make this stuff up.
Okay. I imagine my listeners are sharp enough to figure out what the substitute for stuff is.
Yeah.
And if not, you could just call the office and we'll explain to you.
Yeah. And as I was going through it, it's like no one could, I mean, first I lose my speech, then I lose my sight, then I can't walk, then I can, you know, and it's like, all right, this, you can't make this up. And the whole progression through it, I will say, if I didn't have my family, I don't know that I would have made it through it. I really don't. It was that, I think when everyone has seen sort of that survivor of an illness or something that goes, oh, it was the greatest gift that was ever given to me. I don't see it that way.
How do you see it?
To me, I see it as it was an absolute interruption to my life. But the experience, the thought that someone could make it through an experience like that in one piece and be able to talk about it afterwards, you know, that to me is something worth sharing. But it's not an experience I would ever wish on anyone.
When you say family, I mean, it's clear everyone would think of the spouse, in this case, your husband, Michael, who was steadfast throughout the entirety of the ordeal. But it really affects everyone in your circle, your inner circle, and a couple of degrees out from there, right? You mentioned
Absolutely.
A lot about your sister who's in the medical field, who was great for Michael and deciphering all the language and tests. And so it is a crisis not just for you, but for many, many people around you, right?
It touches everyone in your family, be it just only through the thought, because, you know, there are always things that come up. Of course, you're thinking about that person and the trials that they're going through, but then you're also thinking about your own mortality, because in the back of your mind, it's like, well, my gosh, if that could happen, and that was something that I heard from a lot of people. Well, if this could happen to you, it could happen to me, because I didn't do half of the things for my health that you do.
But
and oh my goodness.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but isn't that where a lot of people find experiences like you went through, that's the gift of having a little bit more of a zest for life and living every day as it comes and maybe not sweating out the small stuff and having a little bit more grace and peace? Doesn't it stem from that?
I would love to tell you that it does.
Okay.
But what I'm going to tell you is that, there, you know, and that was something that a lot of people also said, well, you shouldn't be worried because, you know, you should only be worried about getting better, or you should only be worried about spending time with your loved ones and so forth. But the reality is, and that's all great, and that's absolutely valuable and wonderful, and, you know, and I cannot say enough wonderful things about that. But the reality is that life still keeps on going. Your electric bill still needs to be paid. Your health payments still need to be made, et cetera, et cetera. And if you find yourself in a situation like this and everyone is giving you that advice, and you absolutely make it through and you have not taken care of those things, you're going to have a whole lot more to worry about. And so that's where I differ from a lot of people, because it's like, well, yeah, this is all great and it's all wonderful and I sailed through it and all of that. But at the end of the day, there are still things that are everyday things that everyone needs to worry about, whether they've been stricken with cancer or strokes or, you know, whatever the case. Those things don't go away. And we, you know, and we have to be mindful of that as well.
So who do you think, especially now with a few years between your medical episode and a few years from when the book was written and published, who do you think ought to read the book? Now, I read the book, I enjoyed it, but it was more because of my profession as well as wanting to be prepared for our conversation. But candidly, I think it's probably not a book I would pick up if there wasn't a crisis in my life, if it didn't seem like there was one on the horizon, and I wasn't mm-hmm. a financial planner dealing with clients that routinely we have to go through rough experiences they may have. As an example, Anne, the meeting I had prior to us getting together for this interview was a potential client that was referred to me by their attorney, and she lost her husband a year ago. He died at a relatively young age, and she's had a very mm-hmm. rough year, as you might expect, mourning, hurting, and then, like you said, dealing with all the stuff, again, read between the lines, of the finances, the bills, what to do with mm-hmm. the house, what to do with all of the stuff they had accumulated. It's a rough year mourning and hurting, but then all of the things that need to get done, that need to get taken care of, it's an awesome process in mm-hmm. a very hard way. I say awesome, I don't mean it like great. I mean it's a big, big task.
Mm-hmm.
So who should read the book? That was a long-winded wind-up to that question, but who should read the book? Somebody that has yet to experience a crisis with a loved one, or somebody that is in the midst of it, or someone that wants to look back on what had happened during a crisis event?
Gosh, I would say, I mean, we'll never know when something like that is going to hit us. But, you know, it's good to be prepared because things, you know, this is life. We're all living a life. So we don't know. I mean, for instance, this couple of weeks ago, my brother-in-law passed away. He drowned. He was a fisherman. He had been on the water all of his life, and he fell off of his boat, and he drowned. Nobody in the family expected that. So it's, you know, that's just an example of, okay, well, how do we, you know, and of course, my sister that you talked about a few minutes ago, she was at the hospital with him because he was transported to the hospital and they tried to keep him alive. She was there the whole time, 3 days, I think it was 2 or 3 days. So, you know, you just, it's, and for her, this is something because she's a nurse, she sees these things all the time. But for the rest of the family and for the rest of the people and, you know, and in surrounding families, they don't, there's no 101 for dealing with this kind of thing. But I think flashes of light kind of alerts you to sort of those things that, you know what, if you're going to be, if you're faced with a situation, here are the things that you should probably take care of before you're ever even, you know, kind of in the midst of it, like the password issue and things along those lines.
What are some examples of things that either couples or individuals can do to, as best as possible, have some preparations if there was a crisis? Could you give us a few examples?
Yeah, absolutely. First and foremost, you should have a financial plan in place. And I'm not just saying this because it's a financial show.
Well, I'm appreciative nonetheless, and I agree wholeheartedly. But tell us why they should have a financial plan in place.
You should have an estate plan and a financial plan in place. And the reason is because the estate plan, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, I don't really need an estate plan. Well, absolutely, yes, you do. Because the argument often is, well, I don't need an estate plan because it's only going to be existing after I die. Well, no, that's not true. What if you become disabled? You know what? You know, you need those elements. You need the elements of an estate plan for either case, and that should be first and foremost on everyone's list. Secondly, you need a financial plan because if something does happen to you where you're incapacitated, you're going to need agents and so forth to carry out what, you know, your wishes, and you can't do that without that. And as far as other reasons for a financial plan, if you're married, you and your spouse should be planning and knowing what you have and so forth, because if a situation like this does happen, boy, somebody has to get on, they have to be on top of the financial issues and you know, how are we going to care for this person, or you know, it's all wrapped up into that.
Sure.
I mean, I probably a very generic answer, but I mean, we could dig into the specifics of what should be in your plan. You know, you should have the appropriate insurance. You should know where your investments are. You should know what your passwords are to your accounts. You should have an agent that can take over in the case that, let's just say, you're spending, you know, days at the hospital with your loved one, but you're not able to pay bills. You're not able to stay on top of those financial things. Well, who's going to step in to take care of it so that you don't have to suffer the issues of not paying the bills or, you know, and having these things done? It's just so key.
I think in my experience, having been a financial planner for 26 plus years now, is that when people hear the term estate plan, they think of, you know, watching the show Dynasty from the 80s, and they're thinking of trusts and offshore accounts and all kinds of sophisticated, fancy instruments that go along with that. But that's not really what we're talking about. When I'm meeting with clients, and I think the way that you're using the term estate plan is the same thing, that's some basics. Have a will, power of attorney, some type of health care directive, make sure mm-hmm. your accounts have beneficiaries on them, make sure
exactly.
that there's a central location where in a crisis loved ones could see what accounts exist and who might need to be contacted in an emergency, who's the attorney, who's the financial planner, who's the insurance agent, who's the CPA. That's part of estate planning, but I don't think that's what people are thinking of when they hear that term. They're picturing mm-hmm. something grand that only the super rich participate in.
Yes,
your experience,
and
too?
It is, yes, and that is exactly correct. Or they think that if they create their estate plan created, that, you know, it's going to be like washing your car. You know, if they create their estate plan, they think, okay, well, I'm going to die the next day because it's done, right? No, it doesn't happen. That's very rarely does that happen. The other thing that I think is very important in terms of your estate plan is that your powers of attorney, be they for property or be they for health care, when you are having this plan created, you need to absolutely make sure that your agents, in the case of healthcare, in the case of property, know that that you are electing them as agents, and they are prepared to handle the responsibilities that go along with that.
Yeah, that's good advice. That's very good advice. So now let me ask you, and let me just say, that I really appreciate you being so open about your experience. I know it was expressed in the book in a very personal way, but thank you for sharing today with me, because I also wanted to talk about, I know you and your husband had another medical event this year, this time him, not you, and thankfully I think he's doing well, right?
He is. He's bounced back quite nicely.
So it's okay to say he had a heart attack, right? His first heart attack. And so what I'm curious about is not so much the particulars of his medical events, but I'm just curious, given that you had this episode that touched you in a very significant way, caused you to write this wonderful book, Flashes of Light, and then a few years later, you kind of have another of these crisis kind of events. How did this experience compare and contrast to last time? Can you touch on that a little bit? I'm curious.
Absolutely. Okay, so here are a few ways in which it was different. Number one, when I fell ill, I had the minimum of health insurance that you could possibly have.
Okay.
The big huge lesson there. This time, when Michael became ill, we actually had all-inclusive health insurance. So the first health event that was mine cost us. I'm not going to go into the numbers, but I can tell you that most people would not have been able to absorb that.
So it was expensive. The number's not important.
Yes.
And I would imagine that must add an enormous amount of stress to the whole situation, not only dealing with the medical rigors of what you were going through, but also the burden that having big bills and affecting your net worth and finances, it only makes a bad situation that much worse, right?
Absolutely, because the other side of it was I was running my business at the time as well. And when I was out, that wasn't happening because being a coach, I don't get paid unless I'm working, right? Not in that capacity back then, that was the structure of my business.
Sure.
So that was a huge eye-opener too.
Okay.
And then, but this time, so when Michael became ill, first of all, we had better insurance.
Right.
And secondly, this is kind of funny, not funny, but when we were getting ready to go I was getting ready to go to the hospital with Michael, and we actually had to take the time to make sure that the hospital that we were going to was the correct one for the insurance. And it's actually kind of a funny story because he said, I'm like, let's just get to the hospital. Let's get to the closest hospital. And he's like, well, wait a minute. I need to figure out, you know, what that hospital is. And I'm like, if you don't get in the car, I'm leaving without you. So here he is. He's trying to look for, he's like, no, I have to find. And of course he identified because I was so nervous that I couldn't figure out which hospital was the right one. For whatever reason, I couldn't pull it up on the insurance. He had the presence of mind to do it. And he got us to the right, he's like, no, this is a hospital. We could have gone to the wrong hospital and we could have ended up in the same position we were before, but he had the presence of mind. So
Michael was the practical attorney, even in the midst of having a heart attack.
Yes, exactly. That's, it's like, well, wait a minute,
that's pretty impressive. And so was there anything with this that you were helped by the previous experience and or thinking it through by writing the book?
Because obviously from the book, we had a lot of things in place that we didn't have the first time. And me being on the other side, like Michael being the patient and me kind of being in the caregiver, which my family laughs at that because I'm not really a great caregiver. But
I wasn't going to bring that up, Ann. But
yeah, I'm not. It's not something I'm going to get an award for. Let's put it that way. But it's interesting because it allowed me to see from the perspective of that role versus and Michael to see just what a patient goes through. And, you know, and when you have that juxtaposition, you kind of go, oh my goodness, I can really understand even better. Not that we didn't understand what each of us was going through, but it's just a whole new level of, you know, kind of that phrase, wow, I get it now.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you could only be so prepared for these events. That's like, you know, to use sports analogy, I mean, you could read about playing football, but playing it is a totally different experience, and there's no substitute. And going through what you went through, there's only so much preparation you could do paperwork-wise, spiritually, emotionally, philosophically. There's only so much you could do. Living it is its own experience. There's just no way around that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So, it's good. So listen, for those of you that are listening to the conversation, I'm going to do something that I haven't done before. I worked it out with Ann. We got a pretty good thing going. If you go to the Elliott Wealth website, www.elliottwealth.com, Elliott has two L's and two T's, elliottwealth.com, click on autographed book giveaway. That's right on the main page, very prominent, and there's a code. The code is success. Put in the code, and we will send you an autographed copy of her very special book, Flashes of Light. So please do that. It'll be good for the first 50 people that register, and you can do that as soon as you listen to this podcast. And I know I thanked you at the top of the interview, but I want to thank you again because I know you're very busy, and it was really enjoyable to have you talk about the book and your experience. So thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm flattered.
Yeah, and hopefully we will have you on the show again. And please, when you go to the Elliott Wealth website, poke around a little bit. In addition to the book giveaway, you could find out more about me and the rest of the team here at Elliott Wealth Management Services, how we work with clients, helping them win with money and to be financially prepared. And you could do a couple of things. Sign up for a complimentary, no-cost initial consultation. You can sign up for our monthly mailing list. And lastly, you could subscribe to this podcast, the Simply Financial Podcast. Thanks again, Ann. I will be back with all of you in an upcoming episode of the podcast very soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
The views expressed are not necessarily the opinion of Sage Point Financial Incorporated and should not be construed directly or indirectly as an offer to buy or sell any securities mentioned herein. Investing is subject to risks, including loss of principal invested. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. No strategy can assure a profit nor protect against loss. Please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Please note, the information being provided is strictly as a courtesy. When you link to any of the websites provided here, you are leaving this website. We make no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of the information provided at these websites, nor is the company liable for any direct or indirect technical or system issues or any consequences arising out of your access to your use of third-party technologies, websites, information, and programs made available through this website. When you access one of these websites, you are leaving our website and assume total responsibility and risk for your use of the websites you are linking to. Securities and advisory services are offered through Sage Point Financial Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, insurance services offered through Elliott Wealth Management LLC, not affiliated with Sage Point Financial.
I was in New York, seen from a small town dream. I was flying high. put